Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday evening, August 24, 2008. It is now 8:02 p.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, I'm sorry we cannot take phone calls in today. I made a big boo-boo, and that big boo-boo was that I assumed that our phone lines that hook up our phones to the studio were on automatic renewal on the credit card, and they were not, and I did not renew them manually. I thought it was a promotion, and so I wound up without a telephone. In fact, the phone expired. Time expired about 5 minutes ago, and I was trying to get it done beforehand, but I did not have enough time. So I have no phone calls, no phone today, and that's almost just as well, because I am certain that very few people will be listening, because most people are watching the recap of the Olympics this evening. I would be doing that if I wasn't broadcasting, but I'd like to keep my schedule on a regular basis so that my listeners know when we're on live and whatever. Unfortunately, you just can't call in this evening, but I can call out as I'm doing right now, and this still will be in our archives as well. If you have any questions or comments about tonight's program, I do encourage you to send me email to comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. What I'm going to talk about tonight is probably quite controversial. And I know there's a lot of people who just downright disagree with a lot of things that libertarians say. But this is an education program, and we both learn from one another. You can also call 918-919-0101 if you want to leave a voice message after our live broadcast. And folks, I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. And he also has a radio program, and it's a blog on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/mytwocents. In fact, he's broadcasting right now. He broadcasts till 8:30. We overlap a little bit. Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Okay, enough of the introductions. We had the Olympics this week, and I have opinions about the Olympics, and those opinions are not shared by many people at all. And I'd like to give you, just before we start our regular subject matter, I'd like to talk a little bit about the unfairness, I think, of the Olympics. You would hope that the Olympics would do one thing. At least it would assist in global harmony. And yet it really doesn't do that. It pins the big superpowers against third world countries. It's not a level playing field at all. You know, in high school, they have classes by size of school that play one another. For example, here in Oklahoma, I don't know how it is in other states, but in Oklahoma, they have 1A, 2A, all the way to 5A football, for example. And a 5A team doesn't play a 1A team. 1A team, because a 1A team may only have about 20 to 40 people, kids in their senior class, and a 5A team may have hundreds to draw from, you know, to have seniors on the field. And so, you know, small teams play small teams. Small schools play small schools, rather. And sort of on the Olympics, it's the same thing. where you have small, you know, a 1A team playing a 5A team. And the way the superpowers, and I include China as a superpower, by the way, today, but as a big, powerful nation such as that, that really spends billions of dollars, has billions of people from which it could draw from, not billions, but millions of people it could draw from, and they have these programs where they put all the children through these screenings to see who's most eligible to do what. And then you have a third world country that may have just one person, you know, who's eligible to compete. Just one person in the entire country, or maybe three or four people. And I really wish there was, I mean, I don't know how you create harmony around the world when you tell the third world nations, you're just not good enough to compete against us. It bothers me. And I know people get all upset about that. They say, oh, the Olympics is, oh, it's you know, it has all sorts of great, wonderful things. Excuse me, I have a, I have an email here. Let's see. I have a instant message, I think. Let's see. Do you notice this? And the person put it, did Skype drop you? I said, yes, it's... Yes, I forgot to pay the bill. Forgot to pay. I'm going to write them a message right back while we speak. There we go. Thank you for calling. That was from BC Football 10, whoever that is. Anyway, and so I have some hang-ups about the Olympics. And one thing I bring up, and I think this is going to lead into so much of what we're going to talk about this evening. And that is when a person comes in fourth place, in other words, they don't make the gold, silver, or bronze medal, they're fourth place, they're nobody. I mean, they don't get any special recognition. I mean, they may go back to their country, and maybe if they give a speech, they'll say, you know, Bob Jones here, represented us in the cross country in the Olympics. You know, he didn't win. You know, you're almost branded a loser. In fact, it's so competitive. If you don't get the gold medal, if you miss the gold medal by 0.02 of a second, you're a loser. You know, I mean, it's that attitude. This is what I'm saying. It's that attitude that permeates, you know, the Olympics that really bother me. I really wish it really wasn't that way. And I counter that. Now, people get all upset. They say, oh, you know, stand the Olympics. It's, you know, for the very best and, you know, equal opportunity, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, what they do say, what I do respond to is that if you were the fourth best mathematician in the world, you know, would you be highly prized? Would you be sought after? I mean, would you be considered, like, fantastic, you know? You would probably even get a Nobel Prize. You're not a loser, are you, if you're the fourth best scientist in the world, astronomer, mathematician, surgeon, accountant, fourth best auto mechanic in the world, diesel mechanic. I mean, you name it. If you were the fourth best, you would be catered to worldwide. People would be wanting to affiliate with you. You would be the guru of gurus of gurus. Although you're only the fourth best in the world. And you're not a loser. That's my point, is you're not a loser. In fact, you're probably well-respected worldwide. Now, but in the Olympics, when you're coming fourth, you're a loser. And I have problems with that. And this is where I have my problems with it. We have, when we raise our children, I mean, we will encourage them to swim, play ball, whatever the case may be. And they will put in, I mean, if they want to go to the Olympics, they're going to put in 2 to 4 hours per day minimum, sometimes more, 7 days a week. And on weekends, it's going to be longer. I mean, they're going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and they're going to practice and practice and practice and practice. And they may not even make the Olympic team. What if the students got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and studied and studied and studied and read, you know, and did things that were and including, you know, played ball. I mean, got out and got a lot of exercise, which we don't do. Intermingled with a lot of recesses. I mean, studied for a half hour, went out and played ball, came back and studied. But they put the same amount of effort in improving oneself. I mean, just think of the productivity of this country. Just think of the things that would be discovered. Just think of the mentality of this country. Anyway, I'm getting off the subject, but a little bit off the subject, I guess. But how do we define America? You know, how do we define Americans? Well, when we go to the Olympics, we're proud to be Americans. And even that's a misnomer, because Canadians are Americans, Mexicans are Americans, Costa Ricans are Americans, Hondurans are Americans. I mean, this is North America. And of course, then there's South America, Brazilians and Peruvians and whatever. But and what we consider ourselves Americans, and you know, other people take exception to that. They say, well, we're Americans too. And they're right, they are Americans. It's just that it's difficult to say we're a United Stater. I mean, you know, it doesn't make any sense. People from around the world have different names for us. I mean, that represent the United States. I don't mean that facetiously, but, you know, that represent the United States. But we don't. Because we're the United States of America, we're Americans. And I guess that's okay. That's a matter of semantics. But if we're going to be Americans, then we have to define what Americans are. And you know as well as I do, if I asked anyone what's an American, and if I asked 20 people, I would get 20 answers. In fact, let me go further by saying this. I don't think I would get an answer from most people. Most people say, well, I really don't know. Which begs the question, when we say we are Americans, what are we trying to define? Now, some people say, well, Americans, we're red-blooded Americans, you know. You know, we stand for freedom and justice, and we're God-fearing people, and stuff like that. But that doesn't define America. It doesn't define an American. Now, you've heard the expression all too often when someone expresses an opinion that's contrary to the government-fed line. And when I say government-fed, I mean, because it's usually a lot of, you know, rhetoric, and there's no substance behind it, but it sounds good. Now, the response to that is, that person is un-American. I don't know what they mean by that. Now, in that definition, we're saying that an American is someone who agrees with public policy. But is that American? If we want to define America based on the Constitution, we'd have to say that we are dissidents in thought, aren't we? Aren't we dissidents? I say we revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. But we are. That's what Americans are. I mean, that's our tradition. That doesn't define America or Americans. And yet, being a dissident or revolutionary is closer to a definition of American than it is when someone agrees with a oversized bureaucratic government. That is fascinating, isn't it? Now, I've given this, obviously, a tremendous amount of thought because I had this program this evening. And I had a lot of difficulty trying to define what that meant. What did this mean? And I really thought I had an answer. And I thought the answer was going to be in our Constitution. And then I realized in thinking about the Constitution, now I didn't sit down and read it, well, I've read the Constitution before, but I didn't have to do this again. And I thought to myself, do you know the Constitution does makes no reference at all to Americans. When it says that we are all free, it says all free. It doesn't say people who live in the United States are free. Think about that. We are all free. That means everyone. So I said, well, geez, I mean, we really don't have a definition of America. We have really a definition of how people should be living in the world. And when you look at our Constitution was not representing necessarily the people who were born here, or he came here from Europe, or from the Far East, or any other place in the world, and residing here. Our Constitution, and this should give you chills, our Constitution was defining mankind, or humankind, or however you want to say it. Excuse me if I'm saying the wrong politically incorrect word, but it's describing mankind. In other words, our Constitution, saying that we have inalienable rights, does define America, but defines everyone around the world, no matter what country you live in. Oh, now we can argue that they have dictators and they don't have constitutions, but we don't need a constitution. You know, I read a very interesting article about the necessity of the Bill of Rights and how unnecessary it was. And when you think about it, how unnecessary it is. But we are saying that the Constitution actually provides for us our rights in the body of the Constitution. The Bill of Rights was tacked on afterwards by the Anti-Federalists because they truly distrusted central governments altogether, closer to anarchists. And they wanted just to make sure, they wanted to make sure those words were in the Bill of Rights was in there so there was no misinterpretation of the Constitution. But actually the Bill of Rights is unnecessary because the Constitution basically says that the government has no rights. We are the governors, we govern, and the government's just there to protect our rights of self-government. Interesting, isn't it? So when we define American, what are we saying? You know, it's a fascinating subject, philosophically, and I don't think, folks, there's an answer. And I'm sorry to say this evening, I don't have an answer for you. Because the more I delved into this subject, the more that I realized I don't have an answer. There is no answer. There is no such thing as American. There is no such thing as a person of the United States. And let's just take some examples. Back 200 years ago, people were self-sufficient. The thought of a central government was, objectionable. People lived on farms. They had no connection with government at all. They were the governors. They did what they had to do to survive. They relied on no one but themselves. Those people who lived in big cities and who were the, bourgeoisie, basically, of America at the time, thought that the British were nuts for being involved in all of these foreign conflicts around the world. Could you imagine? And back then, we knew that Britain was involved in a war, in an occupation in India. We thought that they were absolutely stark-raving mad. Now, that was Americans 200 years ago. How would we define them back then? Well, we would define them very, very closely as to what the Constitution provides for us. And that is that we're free to do whatever we want, provided that we don't infringe upon the rights of others. And the federal government is just there to protect that right to do so. Period. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, I often think that the easiest job in the world is being president of the United States, contrary to everything that you've ever heard. Because the government has no power. No power at all. And yet, our presidents, and they've done this for a century, at the whim of a president, we send our boys over and our women over overseas to get killed in foreign wars. Usually without the consent of Congress. And Democrats and Republicans. Johnson with Vietnam. Truman threw the atomic bomb on civilian populations. I mean, you know, George Bush in Iraq. I mean, you name it, goes on and on and on. Even Bill Clinton, Serbia. You know, in Yugoslavia, thousands of people were killed in the bombings there. And yet, so if we define America today, we would probably define America as how our government wants us to define it. In other words, support your troops. See, if I say I don't agree with the war in Iraq, somehow that's translated to I don't support our troops. Kind of silly, isn't it? Now, does that define me as an American? No, but if I go back, if I really wanted to be a truly free person with inalienable rights, as the Constitution provides for everyone, and it basically doesn't provide it. The Constitution provides nothing. All it does is it philosophically puts on a piece of paper saying, hey, would you believe it? People are free. They were born free and they stay free. And governments should not infringe upon that. That's what the Constitution says. And it's not restricted to the boundaries of the Atlantic and Pacific Ocean. It's for everyone. And today, folks, we are no more free than many countries around the world that we perceive as being dictatorships. In the state of Oklahoma, we're trying to get Bob Barr on the ticket, on the ballot. Can't do it. Is that free? He may be in 48 or 49 states, except for Oklahoma. Is that freedom? If I was forced to define an American, I would say America is a place that gives everyone equal opportunity, where there is equality in opportunity. Not equality in the results of people's efforts. In other words, redistribution of income, as in most other countries around the world. But here, everyone has an opportunity because there is no class. I was reading an article by Paul Jacobs. I think he's one of my favorites. He is my man. He has a daily article that he writes. And it's called The Townhouse, Town Hall by Paul Jacobs. And you can subscribe to it. And I suggest that you recommend that you do. And he said, Obama said the other day in a speech, he's going to put, in quotes, put the middle class first. He says he was outraged at the condescending nature of that remark. Don't we define America as a classless society? But then what happens is that our politicians define us by our class. And they create the perception of class warfare. So while we may be Americans, our politicians are not. Even as we think of them as great servants, you know, of the people, and we vote for them, they're not. You know, during the Depression, people didn't sign up for welfare because they thought it was morally wrong. They didn't sign up for government assistance. Today, if there was a depression, and I'd say within a year we'll be in a depression, that we would be outraged if we didn't get government assistance. Look, we have stimulus checks. So how do you define an American today compared to an American during the Depression? The American during the Depression really was sort of the ideal of an American, standing on their own two feet, solving their own problems, getting together, you know, digging down deep, you know, seeing through the rough spots, not depending on anyone, you know, unless it was immediate family and friends, helping community, working its way out. And what are we today? We wait for a government check. Are we Americans today? Are we Americans today? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if we are even the perception, our ill-defined perception of Americans today. I'm not certain. Not only we cannot define what an American is, I'm certain also that we could not even agree on a definition. Now, here's the worst part. I am also convinced that if we did find close to a definition of an American, even something that was sort of close to the reality of what we should be, we would object to it. We would almost find it insulting, and we would argue the point. And it wouldn't surprise me if I receive email, you know, arguing that, you know, I'm un-American. So-and-so is un-American. That's an un-American act. You know, if we protest the government, it's un-American. If we disagree with the war, we're un-American, whatever that means. In other words, if you're not brainwashed, you're un-American. If you are, in fact, a revolutionary in thought, a dissident in action, you're un-American. Isn't that interesting? At least by a majority of the people. I'm not certain that this definition will ever be completed. But I wanted to mention that because I think it's something we should think about. Because when we start thinking about it, maybe we would take all of those silly beliefs that we have of what we believe an American should be, together with all the beliefs that we bring with us, all the baggage we bring with us, and contaminate our thought with that. Instead of saying, what American is what all people around the world should be. They should be free. They should be free to transact as they wish with anyone else in any part of the world, provided they do not infringe or forcibly interfere with the equal rights of others to live in whatever manner they choose. And that's a definition that Americans would find very difficult to swallow. Well, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle, something I love to do. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. That's the free life. Folks, embrace it. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.